Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability. Disrespect confesses we've hung on to these two interviews since April. We didn't want you to think these people were talking about different issues. Minister Greg Thompson of Veterans Affairs and retired Captain Sean Bruyer are talking about two faces of the same program, the Veterans Charter, introduced on April 1st. They had enough to say that there is no time for music in this interview. However, there is a break between the two speakers. Without further ado, Minister Greg Thompson, Captain Sean Bruyer. On Disrespect. Disrespect introduces the Minister for Veterans Affairs, MP Greg Thompson, from New Brunswick.
Brunswick Southwest, yeah.
All right. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it.
Congratulations on the success of your government and your posting to Cabinet.
Thank you, Jeff.
I'm calling today about the Veterans Charter. Is this a Conservative program or is this a Liberal program that the Conservatives have had to oversee as it comes into effect?
Well, the implementation date was April the 1st of this year, and it was agreed upon. It was actually passed in the House of Commons by all-party agreement, and it had the support of all parties in the House of Commons and the Senate, by the way. And in addition to that, it had the support of six veterans groups and present-day Canadian Force members.
What was the rationale behind the revamp?
Sadly, through, I guess, the years, the Cold War, and I guess the peace dividend that we enjoyed during the 80s, some of these programs sort of slipped through the cracks over the years, and some of the basic programs that veterans enjoyed then didn't address the present needs of today's veterans, simply because they were designed many years ago, and some, as I said, just simply disappeared.
You mean the programs disappeared?
The programs disappeared, like, for example, the educational component when veterans returned after World War II, and also the ability to buy and purchase a home. Some of those programs simply weren't there.
What did you regard as the high points of the change in the legislation?
Well, I think it's really what it is. It's comprehensive. It's sort of looking at the entire wellness of the veteran, if you will. And I mean by wellness is, there's a big emphasis on training and reestablishing the veteran and his family back into civilian life.
Right.
And because sadly, under the old program, the only way that a veteran could access any of the programs, like the health benefits or the educational benefits, as limited as they were, or any other form of counseling, was through the pension process, if you will. So, in other words, you'd have to be pensionable to get any of the programs under the old system. Under this system, you don't have to be pensionable to get some of the wellness programs, as we've designated them being. That is, educational programs, counseling programs, and so on.
So, in sum, they're more broadly available.
Absolutely, they're more broadly available. They're available to every veteran that once they leave the Canadian Forces. One of the things that we sometimes forget, but most of the veterans in today's, most of the veterans coming out, what we call the Canadian Force veterans, as opposed to the older veterans or war veterans, if you will, there's the average pension is about 25%. And the argument would be, well, who could actually live on a pension of 25%? We kind of forgot about the retraining aspect.
Yeah.
And that's really the biggest difference in this one, Jeff, for saying, just realizing that that's the biggest single challenge for a veteran to have a successful transition, if you will, for he and his family, is the fact that, you know, you cannot make, you know, basically you can't support a family on a 25% veteran's pension.
No.
So there's got to be something better than that, and what is better than that is a training package and a package which really focuses on the future of the family. So that's really where this new charter really does shine.
It sounds as if university education is no longer universally available to veterans, but that through their earning loss benefits, they would pay for it. Am I correct, or have I got it wrong?
Well, there is a component in there, because if the person has the ability to go to university, that university education would be available to them.
Right.
So, in other words, you take tuition and the support that would be required, and so you would. Could argue that that would provide most of the training that would be necessary for that transition.
That would be the sum of support then, $20,000.
That's correct.
And
even in terms of that $20,000, I mean, if we have to do more over and above that, you know, that's possible within the new charter as well.
You mentioned earnings loss. In the case of a widow, that's indefinite, is it?
That's up to the age of 65.
Okay.
And then at 65, there would be also be a top-up on a pensionable benefit that she would get at the age of 65. And then there's also if the veteran spouse was having a difficult time, there's also another what we'd call safety net that under which she would not fall, or we would not allow her to fall, if you will, income support at that point.
And that is in the nature of a safety net, then?
Well, it is a safety net because, for example, most people say they prepare for retirement at the age of 65. And so if any of those benefits, if they did cease and then the widow was still in need, that would kick in to make sure that, that they would have adequate income to support themselves.
When do they qualify for this lump sum?
One of the strongest parts of the new charter is that amount of money on the event of a death or disability, if you will. And the lump sum, they qualify from the day that they would be discharged, if you will, from the service. So, for example, if a veteran leaves the forces because of a disability, that's when that would be triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in the event of death, that would be the day that payment would be triggered, if you will.
And so, right.
And the disability factor would be, for example, if you're 100% disability, and then there's a graduating scale there. So, for example, if you came out with a 50% disability, that amount of money would then be one-half of the $250,000, which would be $125,000 tax-free.
Right.
So that's how that would be factored in. But then again, the veterans and the widows would still be eligible for the retraining programs.
Okay.
And in fact, if the veteran, which is one of the strongest points in the new charter, say for example, the veteran, because of a physical disability or a post-traumatic stress syndrome issue, could not be retrained, the spouse of the veteran has the option to take that retraining as well. The worst case scenario, which obviously is death, the veteran's wife then would be still entitled to educational benefits, and so she could be, in fact...
As well as earnings loss.
In addition to, that's right, so she would keep the earnings loss, plus she would get the educational benefit, and in fact, if after the training found work or suitable employment, none of that earnings loss would be clawed back. She would be allowed to keep that as an incentive for retraining. So that's really an incentive for a family because there's nothing worse than the loss of a loved one in defense of the principles and values that we stand for as Canadians. So we know that when young men put themselves in high-risk areas that their families will be taken care of. And, I mean, of course, it could be, and I should be using the term spouse because we have many women in the armed forces. So, in fact, it could wind up being a husband.
I also see there's a permanent impairment allowance. Would that be in addition to the lump sum and the training? And
that's right. Like, the permanent impairment would be for total disability, if you will, or portions thereof. For example, permanent impairment, 100% would be 100% impairment, if you will.
Right.
So that would mean $250,000 tax-free. And so,
oh, it's a lump sum too, is it?
That's right, lump sum as well, exactly.
Okay. Earnings loss goes up to 75%, whereas an old-style veteran's pension was usually around 25%.
Right, I see what you're saying.
Well,
right.
Yeah, and I'm going further, though, in saying that by attempting to return the veterans to work and focusing on things like lump sum in lieu of pensions, and I guess declining to pay out as if the pension were an invested capital amount and instructing the veterans to invest their own pensions, Veterans Affairs appears to be distancing itself from long-term outcomes and focusing on a near-term payout for a turnaround in the veterans' quality of life.
Well, I look at it a little bit differently. What's is never giving up on a veteran and working through with them, and you know, and so there's nothing in that says at some point you know you're on your own, because the truth is this is an open book, it's an open charter, and we never at any point give up on a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
But the emphasis is on wellness.
Mm-hmm.
And the emphasis is on retraining and total support of the veteran and their family to get to that point. And if for some reason that fails, we'll still be there with the appropriate safety nets to catch that family and his veterans. But we won't give up on the counseling. We won't give up on the help that we can provide that family with.
Right.
And because as we sort of started out this conversation, you're talking about the average veteran being pensionable at a 25% rate.
Mm-hmm.
And without sounding crass and without sounding pejorative in any way, I mean, that's basically a prescription for poverty.
Yes.
And so we've got to move beyond that, and that's what this charter does. Of course, it's like any other piece of legislation. It's always subject to review by the House of Commons and an ongoing review by the department. So we're very open to suggestion and very open to improvement. So that's one of the things that I guess that we all like about it. It's not a closed book at all, Jeff.
All right. Well, Greg, I really appreciate the time you spent with me today.
Okay.
Thanks, Greg. Bye now.
Bye now.
Disrespect today welcomes retired Captain Sean Bruyer, who's going to talk to us about veterans' pensions and the new veterans' benefits that took place April 1st, 2006. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I read your letter published in the National Post, and it sounds like you're very committed to this issue. Can you briefly tell us what the issue is for you?
Canada has a great reputation in the world, and we all saw the honor being paid to Tommy Douglas for what he brought to Canada.
Yeah.
And the irony was is that I started to look at his reforms, and they were magnificent. They really did make a huge change in what made Canada special today.
Yeah.
That these reforms were, for the most part, predated him by almost 30 years in the universality of veterans benefits that were brought about after World War I. Universal health care, free hospitals, rehabilitation, earnings assistance for those that can't otherwise be employed.
What time frame are you trying to put them in?
The time frame I'm putting them in is the fact that these come almost 30 years before some of the reforms that Tommy Douglas brought about in the CCF in Saskatchewan.
So longer standing, more traditional in Canada.
That's right. So what Tommy Douglas based these upon, and I don't know if there was a direct link, but they had already been in existence for veterans. And those are fundamental values that all Canadians appreciate and that all Canadians have a great desire to uphold in Canada. And what really shocked me is that these values have been in place for those veterans for almost 90 years.
Right.
And that this year they forced through some programs, and last year they forced through the legislation. And this was done with an absolute minimum of public consultation.
Who forced this through?
Well, it ironically is that all parties forced it through in the House in May of last year in under 5 minutes without a single word of debate or a single minute of committee time. I guess people were fearing an election, so they're trying to ram through the legislation as much as possible.
Oh.
But even once it was forced through, the consultations on creating the actual details of these programs carried on the same restricted, limited, secretive fashion. It appeared to have everything to do with cutting money on the backs of disabled veterans and their families.
And this is called C-45, and it came into effect April 1st. First the consultations, no, consultations afterwards, first the enabling legislation?
Well, yeah, what occurred was that there were six organizations that sent their leadership, a maximum of two individuals each.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, you know, no more than 12 people, but as few as six individuals that were sworn to confidentiality, sworn to secrecy. They weren't allowed to divulge any of the discussions that they had regarding the legislation to their membership. At the same time, they had never seen the legislation until about 48 hours before it was presented in the House to be passed.
Really?
And they weren't allowed to, once again, report that back to their membership, and they were told that they had to publicly support that legislation without having seen it. The organizations, even up to this point, are still, the majority of them, it appears, are unaware of the actual details of what the legislation brings forward and what it takes away. And so as a result, that no one has been willing to stand up in a public sphere other than a handful of very brave veterans that I have the greatest admiration for, being willing to speak publicly and say, this is not right that this is occurring, and this is the result of a non-democratic process. If you don't support this legislation, then you must be a veteran hater.
Who spoke up?
I spoke up, and I am far from a veteran hater. I am doing this because I believe that veterans deserve dignity. They deserve respect, and they're over there fighting for our rights in Afghanistan as we speak, and their contract, if they get wounded, has been changed midstream, and they had absolutely no say in it.
That's true, isn't it?
And that would be unacceptable to anyone. But we're talking about lives of disabled persons.
Apparently they were entitled by tradition and by long standing to disability pensions lifelong. And in fact, their widows were entitled to pensions as well. Is all this gone?
Well, this is what the interesting point is. What is gone is the core program, which was a lifelong disability pension. It's a tax-free payment that's paid out monthly. It's modest. It's nothing that'll make anyone rich, but it guarantees the sort of dignity that Canada wants their disabled soldiers to live under and for the rest of their lives. And should they pass away, then their widows and their children would be supported likewise by the same lifelong disability pension.
Right. So that pension is gone.
It's gone forever. Right now, as far as we know.
Right.
And the legislation clearly stipulates that, and instead what's being offered is a lump sum. Now, everyone says, $250,000, that's plenty of money for people to live off of. But we're talking about the majority of people will receive anywhere from around $25,000 to perhaps $40,000 that's supposed to last the rest of their lives and take care of their disability.
Right. Well, I know some prostheses can cost more than that.
Well, exactly. And so other programs that had been in existence were rehabilitation. World War II veterans were entitled to university education. It was a very successful plan. And these veterans did not have to be disabled. It was considered not only a reward, but also a benefit to society to send soldiers after they'd returned from their service in the military to university, because by providing higher education, they would go out into the workforce and into society and contribute in the same manner that they contributed in the military, to providing value to Canada and to the world. Now, under the after World War II, is what they did with Canadian Forces veterans, is only disabled veterans were allowed access to university education, and only under certain circumstances.
Really?
Under the new legislation, any option for university education has been completely removed.
Yeah.
However, since this public outcry has been made over the past couple of weeks, is there seems to be some backtracking by the bureaucrats, and they're willing to consider, in certain circumstances, university education.
I see.
Now, one of the reasons for stripping away the lifelong disability pension is they said, we need this money to fund earning loss programs, we need to fund rehabilitation and job placement. But what they didn't tell the Canadian public, which they didn't, these six leaders of these organizations were so far, it appears, removed from the process, that they didn't understand these programs already existed in national defense. They weren't programs of Veterans Affairs, but veterans were allowed to access these if they had a disability.
So they were already funded?
They were already funded, already in existence. There were four job placement programs through the Department of National Defense, and no one had to be disabled in order to access those.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very successful federal priority placement for disabled veterans in the Federal Public Civil Service. And these programs, like I said, already funded, and there was, therefore, no reason to take away the money from the lifelong disability pension because the money would have already been provided.
Yeah. For these other programs.
One must ask, if they already existed, why did they need to take away the money from the lifelong
disability? Yeah, where did it go?
Well, it appears that there's a strong move on the part of certain federal institutions that are managing the money to take the funds away from those that can't fight back. Mm-hmm. Disabled veterans serving CF members. They're mm-hmm. bound by law. They cannot speak out against any government policy.
Really?
Well, yeah, so then, I mean, especially if they're in the middle of Afghanistan fighting a war. They have other things to preoccupy their time.
Mm-hmm.
So
apparently mortgage and insurance benefits are off the table as well.
That's right. At World War II...
It must be difficult to qualify for a mortgage if you have a disability and your income is low or maybe uncertain.
Exactly. And what I found is that in the veterans that tragically have been falling through the cracks over the past dozen years, even with these programs that are available to help out veterans, is that the administration of the programs is the key here. We already have an overworked Veterans Affairs Department that is allowing these veterans to fall through the cracks. I'm not saying there's any bad intention on the part of the bureaucrats on the front lines. They for the most part, they try to do a good job. However, the administration of their programs is limited by their workload. It's limited by the seniors that put tighter stipulations on these policies. And the result is that you have veterans that are on below poverty line incomes that very often, because of the type of stress that they go through because of their disability, especially if it's a psychological injury from the war, post-traumatic stress disorder, the depression that comes with that.
It's very much a physical disability often as well as a psychological one. It might be psychologically rooted, but it has far-reaching physical effects.
Exactly, and it has effects on the family. And, of course, we well know that the divorce rates are high for veterans that suffer that. So the veteran is left basically alone without a care provider and without the sort of financial assistance or credit guarantees that would help them get back on their feet.
Now, these credit guarantees, again, they were available to all veterans up to World War II, weren't they?
Exactly. And so we've come almost full circle from where we were at World War II, World War I, where the benefits first began. What the veteran needs, some security. They have gone through the world, jeopardized, sacrificed their health, and they become disabled, sacrificed much of their family life by being away, in giving security to Canada and the world. The least we can do is grant them security if they are disabled for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, you make a good case for it.
Bit by bit, veterans are coming on side that are willing to risk the fear, of course, of losing what little benefits they have, because there are some genuine concerns that if a veteran is to speak out, a disabled veteran, and they're dependent on Veterans Affairs for their medical care, their income security, they're very reluctant to speak out against the department that controls such power over their lives.
Yeah.
So that's one of the main reasons why we don't hear actually a lot of veterans speaking out against such programs.
This is another blow to their esteem as well, that basically even if they sacrifice their quality of life, it's not worth a lot of money.
Well, exactly. And I think, I can't imagine what it must be like in uniform to know that sort of security and assistance is being taken away and they have no say in it. And ironically, it's being taken away by leadership of organizations that represent predominantly World War II veterans.
And so they've become insiders and they don't want to jeopardize this new status.
Well, and one of the excuses they use is that we're going to try to work from the inside.
Yeah.
However, as we well know that to the bureaucrats, if there is no incentive from the public or from the politicians to change, that change will not come.
Yeah. Have you received any indication that this might change?
Well, I've spoken, and I have to thank the minister for having spent some time with me in trying to get to the problem of what's behind the legislation and how to remedy it. The present minister is the most, the most in appearance anyway, that wants to address these issues about the veterans. So
I think he does. He seems to care about these military issues.
Make sure you tell him that I said good things about him. Because he sees my name in the press, I think they get offended by that.
All right. Which minister is this?
This is the present Minister of Veterans Affairs, Gregory Thompson, from New Brunswick. And
right.
He was kind enough to spend some time with me, and he appears very committed to try to get to the bottom of this. However, I think that his hands are tied by, I think in the first off, is that there's a bureaucracy that's entrenched,
right.
A leadership. I think
You mean Veterans Affairs?
Veterans Affairs. And I wouldn't say it's all of Veterans Affairs, because the frontline workers know there's problems.
Right.
They, for instance, told us that throughout Canada that there's been more pension applications, and in some of the offices, more in 1 month than there has been in the entire previous year, because the veterans were trying to get their applications in before April 1st.
Right.
You know, the proof is in the pudding. All the rhetoric in the world can't, you know, speak against the reality that the CF members and the veterans do not want this program. And the proof is because they're submitting their application, so they don't have to be covered by the new program, and they're covered under the old one.
There must be quite a delay then with the backlog.
The veteran, under all the other previous programs, including the insurance plan managed by the military, is that the day that they contacted the office, once a decision was rendered, their benefits were backdated to the day they contacted that office.
Right.
However, under the new plan, the new charter, is that applications, it doesn't matter how long it takes the department to process that, that the payment begins on the day the department makes the decision.
Right.
So the veteran, essentially, and the family is being punished for the inefficiencies of a bureaucracy.
And there's no incentive for a quick decision.
Exactly.
But I gather that there is some monthly income available under this new program, but it's very limited?
Yes, there is a monthly program which is identical to the one that's already in existence under the military insurance plan and earnings loss plan.
Okay.
Okay, and that that pays out 75% of the member's salary if they're unable to work. However, under the current legislation, unlike the military plan, the definition of being unemployable is so stringent, so restrictive,
right,
that all but someone in an almost vegetative state will be forced into the workplace.
Right.
Even having said that, is that that income replacement only carries on until age 65. So it's safe to say that all income assistance for disabled veterans and their families ends at age 65 under the new plan.
All right. Did Greg Thompson give you any indication of a brighter future for veterans?
Well, I mean, he wants to follow up on the commitments made by his party for an ombudsman and a Bill of Rights. I think the key thing is creating a Bill of Rights without enforcement is, you know, like having laws without police. I mean, mm-hmm. It means basically nothing. So
yeah.
The ombudsman would have to come at the very least at the same time, if not before, the creation of a Bill of Rights.
I see. So Thompson's got his work cut out for him, and he's still maybe closing the door after the, you know, the horse has fled, as far as this bill is concerned.
Well, exactly. I mean, to say to individuals, well, now we're willing to carry a consultation on the policies. So it doesn't matter how much we change regulations and policy and sit down for consultations. The real problem exists at the level of the legislation. There has to be amendments to the legislation.
All right. Is there a place people can find out more if they're interested?
Well, there is some independent sites out there on the Internet. One's called veteranvoice.info.
Mm-hmm.
And that was started up in direct response to the ramming through of C-45.
The site is Veterans, plural, Veterans Voice?
Veterans Voice, I believe it's plural, veteransvoice.info.
Okay, I appreciate that. Anything else you'd like to say today?
Well, I think is that, you know, I'd like to make an appeal to the Canadian public. I think the disabled veterans and the CF soldiers really need the help of the Canadian public to call up their MPs, to perhaps go to the media to say that they don't agree with treating veterans with disrespect and robbing them of 9 decades of social consciousness, social caring.
I appreciate your time coming on the show today, Chris.
Thank you for your time.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Sean.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number 4, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.